Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tan Samitan Mahabhagan.
Tan Samitan Mahabhagan.
Upalabhya vasuttamaha.
Upalabhya vasuttamaha.
Pujayam asadharmadhyo.
Pujayam asadharmadhyo.
Deshakala vibhagavit.
Deshakala vibhagavit.
Tansametan mahabhagan.
Tansametan mahabhagan.
Upalabhya vasuttamaha.
Upalabhya.
Pujayamasa dharmagyo.
Pujayamasa dharmagyo.
Deshakala vibhagavit.
Deshakala vibhagavit.
Tan.
All of them.
Sametan. Assembled together. Mahabhagan.
All greatly powerful.
Upalabhya. Having received,
vasu uttamaha,
the best among the vasus,
Bhishmadev,
pujayamasa, welcomed, dharmagya, one who knows religious principles,
desha,
place, kala, time, vibhagavit, one who knows the adjustment of place and time. Translation. Bhishmadev, who was the best among the eight vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there. For he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Expert religionists know perfectly well how to adjust religious principles in terms of time and place. All the great acharyas or religious preachers or reformers of the world executed their mission by adjustment of religious principles in terms of time and place. There are different climates and situations in different parts of the world. And if one has to discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord, he must be expert in adjusting things in terms of the time and place. Bhishmadev was one of the 12 great authorities in preaching this cult of devotional service, and therefore he could receive and welcome all the powerful sages assembled there at his deathbed from all parts of the universe. He was certainly unable at that time to welcome and receive them physically because he was neither at his home nor in a normally healthy condition, but he was quite fit by the activities of his sound mind, and therefore he could utter sweet words with hearty expressions, and all of them were well received. One can perform one's duty by physical work, by mind, or by words, and he knew well how to utilize them in the proper place, and therefore there was no difficulty for him to receive them, although physically unfit. Tan Sanetan Mahabhagan Upalabhya Vasutamaha Pujayam Asadharmagyo Deshakalapi Bhagavit. Bhishmadev, who is the best amongst the eight vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there, for he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. And certainly Bhishmadev was looked up to because of that capacity, or that was a service that he was to provide for the royal family in particular and society in general. Bhishma Deva is one of the Mahajans identified in that nice list given by Yamaraj. When the Yamadutas returned unsuccessful after trying to take the subtle body of Ajamila to the court of Yamaraj, and they were checked by the Vishnu Dutas, then they went back and asked, what happened? Who are those people? So beautiful. We've never been stopped before in so many things. So, in his reply, Yamaraj identifies the 12 great authorities throughout all the history of mankind that are accepted as conclusive. Mahajano yena katasa pantha. You know what that list is? You know that verse? Or the list of who the 12 are? Huh? See if we can recall them. Prahlada Janaka Bhishma. How does it start? Balir Vyasaki Vayam. That's the second half. You're looking it up? Svayambhu Narada Shambhu. Svayambhu Lord Brahma Narada Shambhu. Komara Kapilo Manu. Prahlada Janaka Bhishma. Balir Vyasaki Vayam. Does that sound familiar? You've heard that verse before.
Yeah.
Svayambhu Narada Shambhu Komara Kapila Manu Prahlada Janaka Bhishma Balir Vyasaki Vayam. There's the 12. Last one is Yamaraj himself. So each of those 12 personalities are Mahajans, and this Prabhupada is indicating, other than the 12, even in a broader sense, those that are great religionists or... got another little mini list here. Reformers, preachers, great acharyas, reformers of the world, and their business is to take the essence and present according to time and circumstance. Desha, Kala, Patra. Here it's only mentioned two, Desha and Kala, the place and the circumstance. Excuse me, the place and the time, then circumstance, those three. So this understanding is presented in Nectar Devotion in terms of Rupa Goswami has presented, he describes, I'm here and presenting principles, not details. And as the example he gives, the principle is that one must have a spiritual master. The detail is what instructions the spiritual master may give. And that detail is according to Desha, Kala, and Patra. A nice example, commonly referred to example, is two brothers and one son when they were in Puri, returning back after the 4 months of the rainy season, Lord Chaitanya indicated that one should go back and earn wealth, spiritual and material wealth, and others should engage in worship of the deity, the others should stay in Puri and serve the devotees of the Lord and engage in the preaching mission. So, three people, same time, same circumstance, returning back, but because of their particular character, they were given different instructions. So that's the detail. The principle is one must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. In this case, Lord Chaitanya was instructing them. So, Bhishma Dev's qualification during his life, when he was healthy, was whenever there was any question about what is to be done in a given circumstance, he would establish by his utterances. And it meant that he had to discern higher principle, lower principle. Sometimes we get stuck when there's a lower principle, and what do we do about this? You know, such and such. When there's a higher principle, if we're not conscious of the higher principle and don't know how to make that adjustment, we may get stuck. Like a common one that happens with people is demigod worship, and if there's demigod worship, like our certain friends that we have, that what do we do about demigod worship? That's a principle that's described in the scripture, but there's a higher principle. And the lower principle is subordinated to the higher principle. If one is not aware of the higher principle, if one doesn't have faith in the higher principle, then the lower principle is that which one takes shelter of. And that the intention behind the lower principle is it helps bring one to the higher position. It's meant to bring one to the higher position. When the higher position is offered, depending upon one's faith and one's intelligence, one can take shelter of that higher principle without any worry that there is discrepancy and there will be a reaction. Just like Krishna describes 1866, if you surrender unto me, there's no sinful reactions for neglecting a lower principle. Mame kam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yashami mashucha. So, not just material elevation to heavenly planets, but transcending the whole deal, the whole material existence, by surrender to Krishna. That's the principle. That's the highest principle. Other things are adjusted to assist one to come to that position. And even in ordinary circumstances, like receiving guests, according to one's capacity. And because Bhishma Dev did not have the physical capacity, he received, starting with his mind and then with his words. And one can only imagine persons who had come to see Bhishma Dev, you know, he's on his deathbed. They're not expecting he's going to get up and run around. You know, he's on his deathbed. But even on the deathbed, he knew how to adjust. That is, because within his mind, he was very pleased to have their presence. His words reflected the appropriate disposition and manner, and they were very satisfied. Even he couldn't get up and go around and do things. So that doesn't mean you don't have to get up and go around and do things. If you do have the physical capacity, it'd just be nice and say nice things. But so with when there is some discrepancy due to whatever is the reason, the circumstance, then some principles may need to be adjusted. And being the qualified person that he was, Bhishma Dev knew how to do so. And as a result, the guests were all satisfied, and as a result, everything was still in this position of auspiciousness, made more auspicious by their presence. I spent a little bit of time, mainly out of curiosity, to understand what the eight vasus are, and there's not a lot of, there's reference to them in scripture and in Prabhupada's writings, but not a lot about who they are. There are two particular references that are nice. In the sixth canto, there's a reference of the vasus being demigods. It doesn't say what function they perform in the demigod realm, but they're demigods. And there are eight brothers who are the sons of one of the 60 daughters of Daksha. So Daksha had 10,000 sons and then 1,000 sons, the Haryashvas and Savalashvas, and after Narada, induced them through devotion to not get married and not produce offspring, then after Daksha's cursing Narada, Daksha then conceived 60 daughters. The 60 daughters were divided amongst different sages, those daughters, combined with their husbands, who were primarily Prajapatis, the population of the universe was spread out. Different species of life, different demigods, different forms of life. One of the offspring were the eight vasus. Here's what it says in the sixth canto, chapter 6, text number 11. The son of Sankalpa was known as Sankalpa, and from him lust was born. The son of Vasu, the sons of Vasu, were known as the eight vasus. Just hear their names from me. Drona, Prana, Dhruva, Arka, Agni, Dosha, Vastu, and Vibhavasu. And then it gives, you know, those eight sons with their wives and who was born from them and so on. The lineage of the daughters of Daksha. It's in chapter 6. So then in Mahabharata, there's a reference to the eight vasus, how Bhishma Dev became one of the eight vasus. What happened was, of the eight vasus, one of the eight vasus, his wife, see if I can find the reference, desired the Kamadhenu that was Vashishtha's Kamadhenu. And she requested her husband to secure that Kamadhenu for her. And unfortunately, her husband agreed, and they stole Vashishtha's Kamadhenu. And Vashishtha, being all-knowing, he knew that it was the vasus that stole them. And so something's wrong here. And so he cursed them that they would fall from the heavenly realm and take birth on earth. And so somehow they were given the privilege to choose from whom they would be born on earth. And they approached Mother Ganga in the heavenly realm and asked if she would become their mother. And she said, well, who were you thinking would become the father? And they described one king who would have a great prince named Santanu, and with you marrying Santanu, then we would take birth as the sons of Santanu and Ganga. So she agreed, she descended to the earthly region, Santanu became attracted. There was union and eight sons were produced. One of them was Bhishma Dev. I forget the detail of what happened to the other sons, because when the issue came later about Bhishma Dev being the heir, something happened to the other sons. So he was the only known son, something like that. Do you know what happened?
Kumar, from your lectures on teachings on Bhishma Dev, I think you said that all the sons were put back and Ganga killed them.
Yeah.
They wanted to go back immediately, so they all got that
benediction. Yeah. She made an agreement with Santanu that I will conceive children with you, but something, some kind of a deal.
Then you're not saying anything.
Yeah, you're not saying anything. Whatever happens to the offspring, and one after the next, she disposed of them. And finally, he spoke up when it came to Bhishma Dev. There we go. So then she said, "That's it. I'm out of here." That was the promise. It was difficult because he was very attached to her and what to speak of to the children, but that's right. So he was the sole surviving of the Vasus who had taken birth on earth. So he's described here as the best amongst the eight Vasus. Sounds like he's the only survivor amongst the eight Vasus. But their heavenly position, some function in the heavenly realm. And when Parashuram was having combat with Bhishma Dev, Parashuram had combat with Bhishma Dev because he ordered his disciple Bhishma Dev to marry Amba. And Bhishma Dev refused. He said, well, if you refuse, then you have to fight me. And he couldn't defeat Grandfather Bhishma. So Parashuram's father appeared after so many days of battle and said, you can't defeat Bhishma because he's one of the Vasus. And so by birth, Bhishma was certainly very qualified. And by training in the royal family, he received this knowledge in a proper way, and he was the repository of adjusting things. So we saw some example of that in the little video presentation last night, where Prabhupada wasn't prepared to give brahminical initiation to women, and they were upset, and it happened on a couple of occasions, and then Prabhupada relented and acknowledging this is the way it is in the West. And so he gave brahminical initiation, even though in India that's not an appropriate action, but his justification scripturally was that initiation is not based upon birth in any case. Brahminical initiation for a Vaishnava is based upon the quality of the individual, and through proper training, through the chanting of the holy name and proper training, the qualification can come. And so he awarded. He made a number of adjustments, time and circumstance adjustments, as is necessary for one who is acting in the role of an acharya and presenting Krishna consciousness or presenting the conclusions of spiritual knowledge, one has to recognize the audience. And that's an acharya function, to make those adjustments. One shouldn't imitate. One should have that qualification. Then when one has that qualification, it's part of the responsibility. Prabhupada acted in that way, and Bhishma Deva's acting in that way, and great personalities, that's what that qualification that they're carrying entitles them to do and requires of them to do. Just a concluding comment. Jaidwaita Swami, did he visit here during the summer? He was supposed to. Didn't come. He was requested by the devotees in Radhadesh to make a presentation on schisms. And so he spent a lot of time, like months, doing sociological research on schisms. You know the meaning of schisms? Schism is a split in an organization. Like, say, a political party has a schism. Some people go this way and some people go that way. Different groups, like, say, you know, within Judaism, there's Orthodox and Reformed, or like in the Sri Vaishnava tradition, the Northern and Southern group, some believe this, some believe that. When there's a group and the group splits, that's a schism. So he did a little sociological research. This is, it's interesting, but it's also very relevant. A lot of sociological study has been done on particularly the Christian religion and also Islam religion. And, you know, we see it in just like, you know, the Swami Narayan group and different things. There's one group and then it becomes two groups. And what happens is, traditionally, there's like a sociological pattern that a very powerful, charismatic person starts something. Muhammad started something. Jesus started something. Somebody starts something. And then there's this certain characteristic, sociological dynamics that are very standard during the lifetime of that powerful, charismatic person. Then there's the post-charismatic period. After that person leaves, certain predictable things start to happen. And one of them is, times change. And as time changes, the division comes where some people say you have to do it exactly the way that charismatic person did it. You don't have the right to tamper with the charismatic leader's way of doing things. Then others say, no, that's the conservative approach. And then the liberal approach says, like this, we have to maintain the essence of that charismatic leader's teachings, but we also have to present it, that essence, according to the circumstance of time and place. And then, you know, it starts to split. Some people are the moderates, and they can accommodate both points of view. Some persons can't. And then, you know, a group forms, and then that accentuates another group that forms, and you have the conservatives and the liberals and the moderates in between. Those that just can't stand anything being done in any different way than the way it was done during the time of that charismatic leader. And those that understand their way of thinking. Right, it's not right or wrong, it's just it's a sociological thing. So splits happen when the conservatives cannot accommodate the views of the liberals. Those that want to. Liberals doesn't mean Liberals can mean changing principles, and liberals can mean changing the time and place application of those principles. So we have this phenomenon in ISKCON, even within ISKCON, and then groups break away from ISKCON when they see there's something, either too much conservatism or too much liberality. If there's too much liberality, you know, some people that are conservatives want to go away. So, it requires to maintain the integrity of the institution requires somehow a broad-mindedness enough to encompass both liberal and conservative views, but not where principles are violated, but where essences are maintained. So it's a challenge. And sociologically, the history shows it's hard to retain that. It's hard to retain the unity of the organization through passage of time, because those things start to happen. But the primary thing in the purport is not the sociology of ISKCON. The primary thing is the qualification of Bhishma Dev and the significance of someone who has such qualification as he has. He shows by example how, and he can determine for others how the time, place, and circumstance of a situation can be addressed while preserving the principles. In this case, it's receiving saintly persons. Any discussion? Yeah.